Hi everyone, my name is Don Davis. I'm the current Senior Vice President of Commercial at Zim and former Executive of Hapag-Lloyd, CMA CGM, and NYSHEX.
I'm Caroline Weaver, Senior Account Manager here at NYSHEX, former associate at Flexport.
And I'm Brian Most, former VP at Walmart and current Strategic Advisor at NYSHEX. Hey guys, how's everything going?
Good. Got the holidays approaching pretty quickly here.
We do, we do.
Any
Just
fun plans?
around the corner. Well, here it's going to be pretty quiet. Friends, family, all the traditional good stuff. How about you, Don?
Yeah, I'm just stressed out here because I keep looking at the calendar. I'm like, oh, shucks, I got a lot of shopping to do, and I got a lot of ideas. Not very good execution, but I'm hoping to make a dent this weekend, and could be a Christmas miracle if I make some progress, but we'll see.
Well, you and many other people will be out there, but hey, buying stuff's good. It could help with imports, right? For next year. Hopefully that'll be good for all of us in this industry.
Well, that's why I would like to wait as long as possible to like help, that off season, just to like get that January to be a little bit stronger.
There you go. There you go. Well, guys, today's a special program. We're always excited when we get the chance to have a guest, and today's guest is going to be incredible. I want to introduce you to Betsy Ducat. She is the head of the Global Key Account Program at APL Logistics America. Betsy, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. And Don, people love arts.
There you go. There you
Well,
go.
that's a good tip. That's a pro tip. Except everyone except my son, because he's always like, oh, gift card. Couldn't you just give me cash? Anyway, but it's not bad. It's not a bad option for sure.
Can't argue that alternative.
Betsy, how about you? Are you getting ready for the holidays?
Oh dear God, yes I am. I made a little bit of a dent, but I'm in the same boat you are. I'm very thankful Christmas is on a Monday, so we have an extra weekend for all the last minute activity. But yeah, cookie baking is this weekend, and a little bit more online shopping, hopefully with no expedited shipping payments. But yeah, my family, we have a big seven fish Christmas Eve tradition. Yeah, so that'll be great. It's just it's a great opportunity to see a lot of the family, right? That you just don't get the opportunity to see. And time has flown by faster.
Sounds amazing. Well, Betsy, there are probably a number of people that listen in the industry that that may know you or know your name because you have done a lot of amazing things over a period of time. But it'd be great if we could just start by you just giving a little bit of your background and your journey in the supply chain industry.
Sure, no problem. I'll try and be brief, but I started out with Sealand, the original Sealand. I was an English major in college, had no clue what I wanted to do, started interviewing just for anything and everything, and it was a happy accident. I loved the people. I said, all right, I'll get to travel for a couple of years and then figure out what I really want to do. And the industry is just, it's I was warned once you get in, you won't be able to out, and it's true, right? I couldn't imagine shifting to a different way of working, right? The international space has been it's been awesome, just to be able to see the world. The people that I've been able to work with have been fantastic. But my first 22 years, I stayed with Sealand through the Maersk acquisition, and then I was with the joint Sealand Maersk organization for 22 years before transitioning over to APL Logistics. So I was both liner, logistics, variety of operational and commercial roles. And now I'm responsible for the Global Key Account Group at APL Logistics. I love working with customers, love working with large teams, and love my job, and really appreciated the opportunity to get to join the NYSHEX conference. That was my first time.
Yeah, I mean, so that's it's amazing. I mean, it's an amazing journey. You work with some great companies, which again, had amazing people and have done so many good things in the industry. And one of the things you did talk about was, that you love about your job is the people. I think, one of the things people talk about the most that are in this business is they love the people that they work with. They love the people across the multiple stakeholders and businesses because at the end of the day, yes, we compete. Yes, we do things to try and benefit our companies, but at the same time, we're trying to also do things that benefit, people and economies and things of that nature by delivering by delivering goods. But when we can get together as a group, that's always a lot of fun. And we did recently get a chance to get together. NYSHEX has an annual ocean strategy forum that they hold in New York. This is the third year, even though it was your first time, it's the third year that they've done it. And it's a great chance for over 100 of the senior leaders in this industry to come together and really talk about, you know, industry-wide challenges and opportunities and, you know, pain points, how we might go about fixing those collectively as a group. And we feel like it's a really unique conference. You've probably been to many in your experience. I just was curious, since it's your first, what were your impressions? What did you like? What did you think that the group benefited from? Would just love to hear your initial thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, what I will say is, Gordon, founder of NYSHEX, is a former colleague of mine. And I remember him coming to me to talk about the idea, you know, just coming into the office and just saying, this is what I'm thinking. And the main like feedback point I had for him was, Gordon, I hope the industry is smart enough to recognize what a great idea this is, right? Because now, having been around almost 30 years in this industry, you see how cyclical the industry is. You see how we make the same mistakes over and over and over again. And I think, you know, what he was trying to tackle with NYSHEX, and just look at what it is now, right? With the just diversity of engagement, you know, bringing people together that have come from different areas of the industry with different perspectives, truly to solve industry problems and look at things in a different way. It was very evident there. You know, I definitely was a participant on the panel, but I really did feel like an observer. And what I observed was, it's an incredibly passionate group of people with diverse perspectives coming together. And even in the breakout groups I was a part of after, when people with, you know, from NYSHEX weren't within earshot, the commentary from the participants was, they felt just so strongly about the, I would say, the impact and ability of NYSHEX to really be a neutral party helping to solve industry problems, right? There would be people in the room saying, oh, I wish NYSHEX would do this, would do that. No, because that would make, you know, that would make NYSHEX more biased. We need them, you know, we need them as a neutral party, really helping us to drive, you know, certain industry related issues forward. And I think that's a huge compliment, right? Because there aren't, I just don't think that there are, you know, many groups out there, you know, with this type of interest to really just drive things forward in a positive way for the different members of the supply chain community. So I enjoyed it, and I enjoy the energy. The venue is very nice also. And yeah, and it was great to interact. I mean, it's always a great day to be together with people in the industry.
No, it's fantastic. And anytime you can get together in Manhattan, that's always a nice thing too.
Yeah.
This was my second OSF, and I haven't really been to many shipping conferences, so I don't have too much of a comparison that I can make, but from what I've gathered from people I've spoken to, they all like that it's a very collaborative event. We spend almost half the day breaking into small groups, and you're able to share ideas and collaborate. And I think having that more intimate setting with other people that you may know well, may not know at all, you're able to really share ideas and learn quite a bit. The general layout of the day was, first Lars kicked it off with a recap of 2023, what he sees moving forward for next year. As always, he came prepared with tons of data, data-driven insights. And I found that to be very interesting. I took maybe 3 pages of notes from it. And then after that, we had a panel talking about the data that we need within the industry, followed by a breakout session. Then we did a forecasting panel, which you were one of the panelists, which was a really awesome, very engaging session. We had quite a number of people from the audience that had questions and put you all in the hot seat a bit. And then after that, we had some people that work with NYSHEX come up and talk about the beta product that we've been working on. And that was about the whole day there. So I'm curious to get your opinion on, like, starting with the data that we need. Did you learn anything from that session? Did it validate things that you already feel? What were your thoughts on that?
It did. I mean, I have to say the entire issue of data, it is a, it's a passion point for me. Even during my time at even during my time at Maersk, just trying to bring back customer voice and talk about red thread items. This was starting 15 years ago. I had always highlighted this as a challenge, right? It was always something that customers were trying to get right. It was so frustrating because there's so many participants within the industry that supply data, but it just, it's such an exclamation point. My breakout group, we were talking about the fact that in the past 5 years or so, industries have been born trying to solve this problem, right? You didn't have, and I'm sorry, it could be off on the, you know, founding dates, but you didn't have the likes of Project 44 and Forkites. You didn't have those organizations out there, right, years ago. So you didn't have hundreds of people in service centers around the world, right, trying to plug gaps that exist from either a timing of data receipt or accuracy of data that they're receiving standpoint. And the fact that there are so many dollars and so many people that are thrown at trying to solve this issue that are not the people actually responsible for the origination of the data in the first place tells you about the criticality. Even within my team, we issued a customer experience survey, and we have this section, Eye Towards the Future, where we try and, you know, determine what's most important to people moving forward. Of course, you know, we try, you know, within APL Logistics, it's our responsibility, right, to help customers solve challenges. That's really our reason for being, and to make sure the customers that we support can be as profitable as possible, right? And we move the merchandise in a manner that's going to help them, you know, avoid markdowns, missed sales. And consistently, the most important thing to them in the future is data accuracy, visibility, transparency. In the past, when services were more reliable, it used to be okay, right, to have a day here and there when things were off within a transit time, for example, and having a rear view mirror, you know, rear view mirror view of the data, right? Even if it was a week or two later, it was still fine because you weren't experiencing all these disruptive events. But it seems as if, I mean, certainly it was ahead of COVID with West Coast lockouts or labor, you know, impending labor negotiations. But the level of disruption that has been experienced within the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. I remember during COVID, I would, you know, talk to people. We would all ask each other, what else could possibly happen? And then it would be a week later and there would be something else, right? And we just stop trying to talk about it. So the bottom line is the need for data, the need for accurate data as real time as possible has become critical, right? Because there is so much disruption that people need to be able to pivot quickly, right? Is it going to be Vietnam shutting down? Is it China shutting down? Is it weather? Is it, you know, a geopolitical issue, right? It just seems as if, you know, every day it's something new, right? I mean, today I'm hearing about ocean suspensions because of Red Sea, right? Everybody's dealing with Panama Canal. You know, every day, the questions that my teams are asked, what data can you provide to me, right? To be able to help me not only see, but drive decisions. And if anything, and this is what I was in 4 customer meetings this week, traveling around, and the consensus is, it's hard to think about a time where it's been more challenging to try and get accurate data, right? The parties in the supply chain, you know, from the end-to-end supply chain, they're so disparate, right? So it used to be much more integrated. Now it's just much more fragmented when it comes to who is managing what related to the move. And there's a lot of finger pointing. It's not the carrier. It's not the terminal. It's not the rail. It's you know, it's not the chassis owner. It's not this. It's not that. It's become so much more of a challenge to put the puzzle pieces together for customers that if we can get this solved together, I think we can all focus on things that are a lot more fun. let's say.
Yeah. I think one of the main themes that came out of that discussion too was harmonizing the data. And, you know, one carrier's definition of a certain data point is not going to be the same for all the other carriers. So that just makes it even messier to deal with. But Don, I think you could speak to this. You know, why is the data like this? The voice of the carrier.
I was just sitting here listening, thinking, well, we know it's not the carrier, so it's somebody else, obviously. No, I think that there are a lot of challenges with data and the way we look at data. And I think, you know, there needs to be more of an incentive for everyone to have the right data. And I think part of that goes into this next topic of forecasting, because, I mean, especially from a carrier point of view, this is something that carriers, I think, are starving for, is they want to have a forward look on things, because, you know, carriers are trying to manage these massive assets that have around about a 30% fall down rate, give or take the trade. And on top of that, you're trying to put containers in places where you're going to move them. And when you have these numbers that are shifting, it's very difficult and costly, frankly, from a carrier perspective to manage this. And that's where forecasting could help a lot. But I have my own views on forecasting, which, you know, we keep threatening to have an episode to talk about it, which may be just a monologue of me ranting about it for 30 minutes. I don't know. But I would love to hear what your thoughts were on forecasting, and if there were anything that was unearthed as a result of that discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, first of all, carriers were totally on the hot seat. I completely got off. I really enjoyed listening, right? Because you had the shipper side saying, listen, 52 weeks, having, you know, an equivalent number, equivalent allocation over 52 weeks, like that's not helping us at all, right? That's not accurate. And that's not going to help me manage my business. But I thought when the, you know, carrier on the panel and then also in the room was really sharing more about what they really needed, that was just really enlightening to me, because I'll say it wasn't response to what was needed. It was the fact that the conversation was happening. And I just thought to myself, gosh, if you just get everybody in the room, right, and have that conversation about, you know, what it is they really need, let's be transparent. I'm sure we can make this a lot easier for ourselves, right? I used to manage a customer in the past as an account owner. And what I thought was just, a great best practice of theirs was they got all of their providers in the same room to talk about what their challenges were. And we talked to each other, right? It was the 3PL perspective, multiple carriers, so all calling different terminals, right? Truckers. And it was great that we were all working together to solve these problems on behalf of our customer. The customer didn't have to have, you know, 4 independent conversations and then try and, you know, put the puzzle pieces together as to, you know, what the right solution was, right? We did that together. And I don't know why people are so hesitant. I will say that with my, you know, perspective as a, you know, working for a third party logistics company, I do recognize and I've noticed over time that people are interested in being much more collaborative, right? 15, 20 years ago, it was a conversation, because I've been in this that long, it was a conversation about, okay, Betsy, we can't have, like, just say our organization, Mary, manage the business for Nike and for Adidas and for New Balance. We used to have requests to not have the same teams on each account because there were, like, these secrets nobody wanted to share about how something moved, or, you know, they don't want to risk that. Now these same customers are asking us, can we get in the same room together and talk about how to address and solve these issues? We, as APL Logistics, we have tools that we're developing on the planning side. We get purchase orders uploaded to us from our customers 30 to 60 days in advance of when they're even being manufactured, right? And what we notice is purchase orders. We have an entire report that we run, a doomed purchase order, which means the way the order was created in the first place, it's going to fail, right? There's not enough transit time allocated, right? Based on the mode, for example, based on the origin destination port. Why do I share this? I share this because if we see that for a given customer, 10 to 15% of their purchase orders they share with us are doomed to fail in the first place, then that information is not reliable to then provide to an ocean carrier, any provider in the network to say, you know, this is our plan, because the plans are set up to fail, right? So, and most often that's not recognized until the supplier calls to then place their booking. And then it's too late, right? That's why we're trying to, you know, our organization is creating tools that allow us to look at that purchase order and utilize that 30 to 90 day window, even before the planning process starts, to recognize is something set up to fail and what can we do to address it beforehand, you know, which will hopefully contribute to at least improving the accuracy of the baseline information we're dealing with. Right. But I would just say there would be such value because you have to admit, at least my observation, I'm meeting with customers now and I'm like, OK, you're preparing for your ocean carrier negotiations. Right. And aside from one person just telling me, yeah, we just need Walmart to wrap it up and then we'll all know what our rates are and where we're going to be and where we're going to sit. There really wasn't a conversation about collaborating or having these discussions with carriers about, you know, let's figure out how we can both help each other, right? How can we contribute to a carrier, you know, carrier's efficiency? How can they help us out? How can we both have skin in the game, right? To, who knows, maybe positively impact operating costs and, you know, be able to recognize some benefit in the long run by having, you know, some type of, I don't know, gain share or incentive, but to me, a lot of these engagements seem more, not for everyone, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of them still seem to be more adversarial. and I'll just say, I say, if you collaborate, you elevate, right? There's nothing that can go wrong with people who, you know, come into a room just ready to have an open-minded conversation and recognize their different ways of looking at things and, you know, different approaches to take and ways that we could pivot and do things a little bit differently. I do believe me, there are customers I work with who their objective is to be a great partner to their service provider. So it's not all like that. But, you know, it's not all adversarial. But those, you know, those I would say are the most successful, you know, they're the most successful type of outcomes, you know, that really come from more collaboration and an open mind and partnership approach in that sense.
Yeah, that's really great. And I know Brian and I have talked a lot about this idea of shipper of choice. And I think those are some of the characteristics that, you know, I think carriers are looking for, customers that are willing to collaborate. Because I think there's just a lot of waste in the system. And I know NYSHX has helped bring some order to some of that waste. But still, it remains that there's a number of things that just cause friction to the supply chain. And so it's great to hear your stories about, you know, people willing to be more open and collaborate and think differently. And sure, things are going to be a challenge because things don't always work perfectly. But and I think we're going to talk a little bit about that. But I think, you know, the more, at least, you know, we're not going to get forecasting to be 100%. That's unlikely. But I think making the attempt and at least demonstrating it's like, hey, I'm trying to figure this out together is very encouraging. And I think that puts you in that tier of being that shipper of choice for a carrier.
Well, and it's funny, right? So you talked about in your example, Betsy, about kind of the PO doomed to fail. And that was actually a big theme in the back part of the day of the forum or the afternoon is because the last few years, the biggest question for a lot of shippers has been, you know, what do I do when things don't go as expected? Because it seems like more often than not, I'm dealing with exceptions versus things that actually go as planned. It used to be the old, well, hey, look, everything that goes as planned. I don't want to worry. I don't have to worry about it. Just tell me when things are an exception. No, unfortunately, you know, many people are getting, you know, exceptions and, you know, versus the norm. And what was kind of neat about this is that, you know, NYSHEX was able to do a little bit of homework on the front side of shippers that were going to be attending. And there were about 50 shippers they talked to. You know, three of them actually participated on the panel, but to really kind of identify the pain points themselves, right? And what the challenges revolved around. And I'll recap them because I'm curious to see, again, if they align with what you kind of see on a regular basis with your key accounts, you know, and then about what are some of the things that, again, not only you're doing, but we talked about as kind of best practices. But in most cases, the challenges revolved around the contract itself. So the actual contract between the shipper and the carrier, this idea of, you know, how do we get better at forecasting together? How I allocate and effectively allocate my business on a dynamic basis to carriers when a lot of things change, you know, in their services. And then finally, it had, you know, the challenges were around just pure operational issues and kind of cost, you know, challenges. I'll start there. I mean, you know, are those the typical things you tend to deal with or hear people talk about of this is where the majority of my exceptions seem to come from?
Yeah, I mean, we again, last year, just because of the number of requests we received, we handled carrier booking rejections or equipment type rejections as exceptions, right? So it would be part of the booking process. A supplier calls us to book, they request a particular ship day, customer has given us an allocation, we reach out to the ocean carrier on behalf of the customer to book, and carrier, sorry, don't have equipment available, can't honor your booking. And so we would record the exception, we would be able to provide that information to customers, and they would be able to use it within their carrier discussions to try and improve service. That just hasn't been enough in the last year, year and a half. Customers are asking for a lot more detail associated with the carrier rejections, you know, just trying to understand, okay, is a carrier, you know, changing a routing? Are they outright rejecting the booking? Are they rolling it multiple times? Is it an equipment issue? It's just been, it's been much more complex, right? And I think a lot of customers that I talk to, they're even though it seems like it's been feast or famine, and there's been such a capacity crunch and such challenges, I'd say a year and a half ago, no one is getting too happy about thinking there's going to be this complete dearth of, you know, carrier capacity, and they're not going to have to worry about anything, because I think people are making the assumption that, okay, carriers are going to figure it out and they'll start to remove capacity from the market and they'll start to, you know, everybody needs to adjust rates so they can, you know, people have been making money hand over fist, as you had mentioned before, Don, in the last couple of years, but it's amazing how the tables have turned. And I think customers still want carriers to be profitable, right? So carriers need an ability to make sure that the, you know, the rates are reasonable. So some of that demand is going to be taken out of the market. And so I don't think anyone is just, you know, fat and happy about the fact that there's going to be unlimited capacity. My point being, this long explanation, you know, we're still being asked to engage that same type of detail and provide much more, you know, extensive reporting on carrier behavior. So the data can tell the story and customers can be armed, you know, to have these conversations in the new contractual, you know, in the new contract year. So yeah, I haven't seen those conversations. I haven't seen those key pain points go away. You know, like I said, again, it's just, there's been on the 3PL side, there's been demand for more information as a neutral party and player within the network. And with APL Logistics, there, you know, we have a lot of competitors out there in the 3PL space that, you know, aren't necessarily neutral, right? They have ships to fill. They also, you know, they're part of a broader ocean carrier community. So you know, people have looked to us in that sense as a true, you know, like truly neutral provider to be able to offer this type of information. I think you're spot on, and what was discussed in the conference really does align. It aligns well with what I see in the space that I live in too, with that same customer base.
Yeah, and then you really just talked about the demand for information. I mean, I think the panel summarized it well at the end of the day. Most of the shippers were saying, at the end of the day, I just need to know kind of, you know, what was expected, you know, if something went wrong, you know, exactly what went wrong, you know, what are the root causes so I can fix them? You know, what do I do now about it? And then at the end of the day, like, you know, how do I summarize all this to then have a meaningful conversation, right, with my service providers about how do we avoid it in the future, or how do we get, you know, how do we get better, you know, from this? And just the big themes about you've talked about this collaboration, transparency, but then more towards kind of this proactive solution, right? How do you get to this proactive performance management? You talked a little bit about trying to, you know, catch purchase orders before they're even being manufactured. It felt like that's where a lot of the attendees really wanted, you know, kind of the solutions to be kind of, you know, generated around is, you know, how do we catch these things before they happen? And it sounds like that's some of what you've been working on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is, it's interesting. Like, there are other people that are working on, you know, end-to-end solutions. We offer that. But yeah, our key and core investment is definitely on the planning side, because we also believe that is what will be most economically impactful. Right, because when you're trying to solve a lot of these problems after something has, you know, crossed the ocean or is in transit, it becomes a lot more expensive. And, you know, one key theme we also try and share with our customers, and it's very true, is, you know, how can we help you ship less? Meaning, if we're more efficient about what we're putting through the network as well, that's really helpful, you know, in the end. You know, again, it's really helpful from a margin improvement standpoint, you know, for our customers. It can, you know, just make the overall merchandise flow much more efficient. And when we say, let's help you ship less, within our side of the business and you know, within the part of the business that we manage, like, sometimes you'll have customers that are shipping, you know, half of a container because they're doing the right thing. They don't want to order more than they need, right? But let's understand, is there opportunity, you know, to do milk runs factory to factory or do consolidation, you know, and really, instead of shipping, you know, three partially loaded ocean containers, we're working now to join customers and their wholesale partners together, right? So if we're engaged in managing two different parts supply chain, right? So what can a supplier, I don't want to name names to, you know, breach any confidentiality, but I recognize, you know, ocean carriers, this was another topic that was discussed. It's an FMC related issue, right? That ocean carriers don't allow, or the FMC does not allow, therefore ocean carriers can't support, you know, co-ing a merchandise between customers. And that's where we can step in too and help. Right. Again, especially with, you know, particular customers who have wholesale partners, where instead of bringing their merchandise through to their destination network and rehandling and retouching, we can create that efficiency at the point of origin. Right. Load that merchandise into a shared container that would otherwise be loading light and leaving, you know, the point of origin, and just bring that merchandise right into the customer's distribution center, right? So again, it's all about the planning process. It's all about how can we find efficiencies in the planning process. And to be very honest, there's, you know, carriers can win in this too, right? Because how do you work with one particular carrier in order to set this program up and make it work, right? So it's not just a way to help our customer and help ourselves as a 3PL, but it's another way that, you know, bringing parties together within, you know, the ecosystem of who services the send customer, we can all come up with solutions that will end up helping one another, right? So again, just coming back to the point of collaboration, what can we do to communicate on behalf of our customer? But yes, exclamation point that our investment and development is on the planning process, and that in essence should help the forecasting process as well, right? And the data. Yeah, so thanks Definitely. For make that plug.
I think it makes a lot of sense to be breaking down the process into chunks and looking at it systematically, but, you know, putting special attention on each part of it and how can you make improvements there? Because I think that's really how you find the value. Something else that was brought up was using AI as a way of making planning more efficient and, you know, ultimately with the goal of saving on costs. But Lars raised his hand and was like, well, wait a minute, you know, we're talking about how bad the data is right now. You know, I don't think we should be training AI models on the bad data that we are all agreeing is not good data, which I thought was pretty interesting and a good point to make. So I think the work you're doing is going to help towards that, towards fixing the data.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I have to say, Caroline, like even your former employer, right? I mean, it was reading articles where Flexport, you know, even put a few exclamation points against the fact that it is, you cannot have a 100% technology, you know, related solution in this business. I don't mean to sound, you know, totally archaic. I think I'm just being realistic, right? That we've all been around, you know, quite a while and really understand it's art and science. And I think the data can enable and support a lot of decisions, but I don't know. I think it gets a little dangerous if you just want a solution that just becomes 100% technology enabled. Just, yeah. With how many handoffs and how complex and, you know, what's involved in this process, I would say, you know, that can help create a great baseline or directional guidance. Because I know, it's funny, I've even had conversations, because we have competitors out there that also have, you know, much sexier user interface, for example. And I think the way people market something visually presents itself, you know, that can give people an impression or make assumptions about then how evolved the particular solution is. But the funny thing is, you know, we're all dealing with the same inputs and the same type of, you know, root cause and the same data challenges. So some, you know, some of the interfaces or marketed technology behind solutions could make something appear as if it might solve a problem a little bit more effectively. But you gotta test that out and make sure, right? Because I still think, yeah, there's a very important people factor to complement all of that technology that's out there.
Yeah, 100%. It's technology isn't going to solve all our problems. There's a lot of different pieces to this. And, but like I said, I think it's encouraging. I think it's encouraging that, you know, the four of us could get together and like talk about these things. And, you know, we're wrapping up here towards the end of the show, but I did want to ask you if there's any like final thoughts or anything else that stands out to you on the OSF that we didn't quite cover yet. I know it's a great event. I unfortunately wasn't able to attend this year, plan on attending next year, but I attended the first two, and I'm familiar with how interesting and how great it is to be part of a collaborative environment. But is there anything else we missed or anything else that, like I said, stands out to you that we should cover?
Oh, I thought, I'm telling you, I really, I'm not trying to take the easy way out of the question, but you hit upon, I think, the three topics that I just come across all the time, right? And they've been there. I mean, three topics have been there, right? They just take on a different, you know, shape or angle, again, based upon how the industry has shifted, changed, or you know, what available technology solutions are out there. But the core issues remain the same. I love the format. I like the fact that there was, you know, a panel and then a breakout group that was, you know, that it was great timing, and I think the information was fresh. I love, I think it would be great to actually you know, even extend it and have a work group to really try and dig in to action planning, right? Because there was great discussion, but then how do we, you know, how do we actually take move forward to solving, even if it's choosing one, you know, one challenge to tackle.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that it is encouraging, right? Because it's a different style of event. You talk about topics and then you have breakout groups to discuss it. And I think maybe a takeaway is to carry that even further and say like, hey, why don't we have a cross-functional group that'll meet on a regular basis and commit to trying to solve this problem and pose ideas out to the group as actual solutions. I mean, I love stuff like that because it feels like you're making progress now. You know, you talk about it, you know, over a day you break out, but then, you know, what happens in the time in between, maybe not, it doesn't feel like it's moving and maybe people are moving, but they're just in slightly different directions. So is it more effective to just say, hey, we're going to lock and commit? I don't know, but just throwing out ideas. But okay. So you've been peppered with questions, you know, Brian, Caroline, Don, just throwing things at Betsy for about 40 minutes here. Now it's your turn to turn the tables. You can play podcast host. If there's any question that's on your mind, anything that you're dying to know, I mean, people love to ask Brian questions and he loves questions. So if you want to focus on him, that's fine, but feel free. Is there anything that's a top of mind for you?
Well, there could be things like what's you could answer. I could make it an either or, like favorite holiday movie that gets you in the spirit, or what's the number one thing you asked for on your Christmas list this year, or holiday list? I don't know that everyone celebrates Christmas.
Fair. I think Brian probably, you know, he's itching. I can tell by his facial expressions. I can read that guy like nobody else. And he looks like he wants to answer that question. So Brian, why don't you go first?
Yeah, it's hard. There's really two. So from a family perspective, I mean, it's probably not the wholesome thing, but the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation with the Griswolds is always kind of a family favorite. We watch it every year and it's hilarious. But the other one that my wife and I like is called Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon. It's a hilarious, fun holiday movie. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. But those two are always on our watch list. And then with the girls, it's always Elf with Will Ferrell. So, you know, we definitely get our fill of some fun Christmas movies around here.
Yeah, I second Elf. That would be mine. Usually my roommate and I start thinking about around October, early November, like, it's, you know, approaching time to watch Elf again this year. Probably have the movie memorized at this point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I enjoy Elf and I enjoy Christmas Vacation, but, you know, I kind of like the classics. You know, I like It's a Wonderful Life. You know, I feel like I get emotional every time I watch that, you know, to think about, like, you know, the series of like what ifs and what could have happened in his life. And he gets a second chance. He's so grateful. I guess I just spoiled it for those who haven't seen it, but just watch it. Incredible holiday movie. So absolutely one of my favorites. But Betsy, now you got to tell us yours. I mean, you asked us, we shared ours. What works the best for you?
Gosh, well, I have a 4-year-old who controls everything that's on the TV. So I've seen like every possible, like every version of the Christmas Carol that has to do with, you know, Muppets or, yeah, that's why I'm asking you, because I need an adult. And I haven't been able to enjoy that much yet, but try and make up for that next week.
Well, there's time. I'm sure there'll be a lot on the airwaves over this next week. But Betsy, thanks a lot for coming on the show. Really appreciate you. Great show. Thanks for sharing your experience. And to our listeners, thanks for listening. Don't forget, rate us, review us, wherever you find our podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you download our show. So give us feedback. Love to hear from you. And thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great holiday.
Happy holidays.
Holidays. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Supply Chain Secrets Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast network.